of 8-4 Play, your first, only, greatest, best, singingest home for talk about Japan and games and Japanese games. I'm your host, Mark Gaming Jesus McDonald. With me, humming for some reason, because I know why, he started drinking 15 minutes before we started the podcast.
Yes.
That is JJ, but is it Art Epperson, who recently courted controversy on his Twitter feed by featuring a photo of two pigeons having sex in front of garbage.
Yes. I was walking around my normal photography route through Shibuya, and I walked in on two pigeons fucking. And they reacted exactly like humans do. They were like, what the... I was assumed the male pigeon just, like, flew off and pretended like nothing was going on.
Uh-huh. Just like humans would do.
Yeah.
Put a can on them.
And the female pigeon, like, covered up.
I happened to have my camera on and in my hands and ready to go, and so I took a picture of it.
I'm curious. Do people, because you now... How long have you been doing this now?
A year and a half. Almost 2 years.
Okay, almost 2 years. Where you go around Shibuya taking pictures, usually around lunchtime, same time of day.
Mm-hmm. Morning, noon, and evening. Yeah.
Morning, noon, and evening.
Yeah.
So before, when you get in, lunch... When you go home.
Yeah, on my way to the station. Sure.
So are you seeing a lot of the same people and like the, or are the same people seeing you? Or
I recognize some people, but so many people come through Shibuya now.
Well, yeah.
It's mostly the homeless people I recognize.
Okay. And they recognize you?
Not so much. They're always in their own like thing. But, you know, normally I don't really... the construction workers.
Right. And that's what I think. The cop... You take a lot of pictures of, like, security guards, cops, and stuff like that, who I would think would be the same guys.
I don't know if they know me, though. I mean, it's like one of those things where there are so many foreigners here, I probably just look like another foreigner who's got a camera.
Mm. You do have a beard, too, which is a lot of foreigners with beards in Tokyo recently.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Roy Oathbreaker Blakely? You return.
Here we go.
Just when I thought this was over. In shame. Do you want to explain to the listeners why you are?
Well, as you mentioned on the last episode,
why you
of the
are
podcast,
blushing red,
which you listened
right
to,
which I did listen to.
That's great.
And it's funny because you all said that I wasn't going to. I actually only listened to, like, the first 10 minutes because I knew there was something.
I was
on vacation recently in like middle of nowhere Japan, and I walked by like this building that looked like it was long abandoned, and took a picture of it and said 50 retweets. I will get my hair cut here on Twitter.
Well, you buried the lead. There was a barber pole.
Right.
Active barber pole.
Yes, spinning and everything.
Outside this like rusted like Silent Hill like warehouse looking place.
Right.
50 retweets. So how many? What happened?
It's like over 200 now.
Okay. So and pretty quickly, I want to say.
Yeah. It was like an hour, maybe like an hour or two after I retweeted it, because friend of the show, Adam Ivanko, retweeted it, and then it kind of like went crazy after that.
Okay. And so what did you do, Roy? What did you do?
So I went back. I did everything I could. I went back. Okay, and you have to understand, like, this part of Japan, it's like, it is the poster child for, like, aging Japan. It's like, there's like maybe...
Everybody's moving to Tokyo, they're leaving these places behind.
It's just nothing but old people. Maybe you'll see a child, like...
But
once
the barber pole was moving.
Okay, so I went up to the building, and I knocked on it. And like,
did you knock on the door?
I knocked on the door. I knocked like right next to where the barber pole was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. And I kind of like peeked around to see if maybe I could see like a neighbor or something.
There's no phone numbers anywhere.
No.
There's no like signs of life.
No, I mean, look at the picture. Like the glass is nearly completely opaque. So,
right.
I mean, there was nothing I could have done. I tried. I didn't want to knock
did
the place over.
Did you try opening the door?
No.
You can do that.
I guess I...
In the countryside.
I guess
you just walk in and they're like, oh, what's going on?
Yeah, I guess I should have done that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of places, I will say, like more so in Tokyo than I notice in other major cities. Maybe not in Japan, but definitely in the West, where they're just like, there's no windows. There's no, like, there's every sign that it's a business and everybody's welcome, but there's no windows. There's no way to see inside the place. And so you're just like, well, I'm not going to just, like, open the door
and I already
find out what's inside.
I already had some weird experiences when I was there with, like, places that were like, yeah, we're a restaurant. And then you come in and you're like, and they're like, there's no one in there.
We don't serve your kind here.
Well, no, it's like,
hippie boy.
There was not a single other customer. And then I was like, are you open? And they were like, yeah. And then like,
yeah,
it's just
we're
a
restaurant. Yeah, we're a restaurant. What do you want? We're a restaurant.
Yeah. That happened to me at a sushi place. The sushi was really good, but it was the most awkward like hour of my life.
Because I don't understand. I still don't understand.
So I came in and like there was a woman like just talking to her friend.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, "Are you open?" And she's like, "Yeah." And then her friend like laughs and she's like, "Good luck." And then she leaves.
Ouch.
And then I hear the lady like go upstairs and like she's yelling at somebody. And then like,
oh, Jesus.
And like 5-10 minutes later, like the sushi guy comes down, doesn't even make eye contact once. Like, he clearly doesn't want to talk to us at all.
Right.
And I'm like, is there a menu or something? And she's like, just point to the stuff that you want.
What?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was
like screwing up their like insurance con or something. Like, I don't understand why they would not. Well, anyway,
I think it's just there's certain days they want to work.
So, you're going to go back though, and you're going to make good on that promise, right?
Maybe if somebody throws me some money.
Some listeners, followers, you know, from around the world asking what happened. That was the biggest thing. The biggest problem was you went dark. The PR machine just
stopped. Right. I did not.
There was no update, guys. I went back.
I took a picture of me in front of it when I went back.
Okay.
I know. Questionable.
Yep. We'll take that one to the jury. We'll see you in court, Roy. Let's see. Moving on. Graham.
Hey.
Gogatsu Bro Howard.
Yeah, that's me.
What's wrong?
Well, I'm in a bit of a funk lately.
Yo?
Yeah, so I mean,
do you want to explain what Gogatsu Bio is? Why you're Gogatsu Bro?
I just learned this week, by the way. I've been here for like
so in Japan,
years.
They got this thing. It's called May sickness.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We're like.
It's like senioritis of
well,
the.
Well, sort of like, you know, April's really exciting. In Japan, that's like, it's the start of the year. So everybody's like going to their new grade in school. You're starting a new
start
job.
Start of the school year, start of the, yeah.
Work year, yeah. Right. So, I mean, everything is new and exciting. Then when you get into May, everything sort of like settles down.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of like people, they get into a bit of a funk. And I've been feeling like that this week.
Really?
Yeah. Just kind
even
of
though
failed,
you didn't start anything new in April.
Nope.
So, you nope. just, it's contagious, I guess.
What I think it was.
You
want to
talk
have,
about this, man?
I have a cold now.
Yeah.
And I think, like, my mind got there first.
Mm.
It knew. So now, like, I have a cold, and I think it was just warning me.
But do you want to talk about it? It's okay. We can talk about
right,
it, though.
It's all right. We just started.
Really?
You know, we got to work into it.
There's some, what about going to McDonald's and, like, getting yourself excited with some garbage food?
So,
like,
there's
this
a new,
this
oh
is
my
the
God,
real
garlic
travesty.
Chili bullshit.
The real travesty is that he tweeting. Didn't go to McDonald's to try out the new Ura menu before this podcast. You are a failure.
They started a new campaign yesterday.
So, by the way, just explain to our special guests who are waiting patiently over here.
Yeah.
Graham has no taste buds. He lost them tragically as a child when he swallowed a firecracker.
That's really not fair.
And so he loves like trying different kinds of special foods out of
McDonald's.
McDonald's, go.
They have rotating menus. Like every month, they have like a new thing.
Yeah.
And so the just started yesterday. They have 4 new toppings, and you can take tomato or garlic chili, smoked bacon, or cheddar cheese, and add that to any burger on the menu. You can, like, make your own burger.
The bacon, by the way, the image that you, I think, tweeted for the bacon, I don't know what that is
it's
exactly.
Japanese smoked bacon, man. It's the real thing, the garlic chili.
Say it's a rectangle if you straightened it out, first of all.
Everybody's glossing over the biggest thing, which is the garlic chili. Yeah. You can have garlic chili on everything on the menu.
Uh-huh. So everything old is new again, Graham. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, this isn't
it's not a Big Mac. It's a garlic chili Big Mac.
What I'm saying is, like, there are over 500 possible combinations of burgers you can make.
Yeah.
And, like, they did the math for me. It was
in the
tweet.
PR.
Is there only that many? Shouldn't there be more than that? Like, anytime you do that where you multiply.
You have so much choice, though. This is like open world McDonald's.
Yeah.
You can have any adventure you want.
So how long do you have to try all 500 grams?
They haven't announced an end date yet, I don't think, but usually like a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's going to be
maybe that'll get you out of your funk. You should go put some.
Yeah, like I was in.
That was my point. Yeah.
I was in such a funk that I didn't even go. Just, you know,
well, what can we do to get you out of this, Graham? Tell me. Maybe we can do it in the next hour and a half during this podcast. What can we do?
Well, you could just give me all of your drinks. It'll make it either much, much better or much, much worse.
I mean,
we'll
there's enough Let's
see
where alcohol goes. Here if that's the answer.
Have some ham.
And maybe it is.
Ooh, ham would be good.
Yeah.
John Rahman Ricciardi.
What?
Rahman.
He's a raw man.
Rahman? Why am I raw?
Raw man. Rahman.
Guys are out of ideas this week. What happened? What?
Rahman. You bought a fucking giant thing of Final Fantasy ramen.
That. I see.
Jesus Christ.
That wasn't for me. That was for the children.
Oh, okay. Yes, that was for the children. So
it was. Actually, I don't like cup noodle. Cup noodle's not good to me.
Really?
So they have this promotion. As you know, Final Fantasy 15 had the tie-in with cup noodle.
We
right?
talked Where about it on the previous episode.
Stupidest thing ever. But you could... They had like a pack of like 15... I guess cups or whatever.
Exactly.
And one for each Final Fantasy.
That's
one
right.
Through 15.
That's right.
And they have like pixel art on the old ones and like whatever. It's like the final boss of every game is on the cup.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. And these
were
like
the final boss of Final Fantasy 15.
Spoiler, yes.
Oh my god!
And so
it's just some guy.
I know
he's actually one of the best characters in the game.
I thought
by
it was
the way,
a Doctor
to,
Who. I thought it was a Doctor Who fucking game. I'm like, what is this doing with the rest of these Final Fantasy things?
So this set was like $60 or something, and of course nobody bought it. And so last week it showed up on Amazon for like $20. Actually, Roy's girlfriend tweeted about it. And
no,
I saw it and I was like, well, $20 for 15 things of ramen.
Didn't they do a limited?
I'll give it out to people in the office
of
or whatever.
Them? I thought they did a limited number.
If you bought it when it first came out, you had a random chance of getting like this like big fork like sword from.
Yes, the fork sword thing, whatever. The, like the knife blade,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah. So that's all that was. And so I basically asked everybody what their favorite Final Fantasy was and then gave them that cup as like a...
So I thought it was interesting the ones that are still left there because
I got my
no
third
one took
choice.
Them. No one cared. What was that?
I mean, I was... John sent me a text and he's like, what Final Fantasies do you like? And I was like, 5 is
this
the best
is
gameplay,
test.
But 6 is the best overall, I think. And he's like, good choices, but those are both taken. Yep. So I was like, well, 1, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the usual suspects, but the ones that are left over still in the office as we're recording this. I made notes here. 2, 8, 9, 11, 14, and 15.
But see, 11 and 14 are really good. I don't think that's
well, nobody
like,
here
I think,
plays them.
Yeah.
I think it's just more that like...
If Brendan was
there's,
here.
There's enough better ones that they like all got taken before we got to those.
Who took 3?
Andy, actually, our
right on. Okay.
Super
that
programmer
was a
Andy,
weird too. Who
was picking
the one?
That was me. That was my third pick.
Okay, well, as a third pick.
I took 5 because, I mean, I bought the thing. I get the
sure.
first two, so.
There you go.
I got 4. I took 7.
Well, I didn't
4, ask. 5, and 6 are all good choices.
Fine.
To all
I just
of you.
Wanted to say it, Mark.
Mark, you would have taken 5.
People
I probably would have taken 5, but...
All right.
I also would have taken our special guests. Whoa, that amazing segue. We've been, yes, very, very, very patiently waiting. 2 special guests, not 1, but 2. And I'm just going to say, like, up front, like, we could, 1 podcast episode per each of these guys would not be enough to
definitely.
Cover them. So I'm just going to say right now, we're not going to do it justice. I'm not being sarcastic here. I'm being totally, totally true. Hmm. So I'm just going to say up front, set expectations nice and low and say that normally we would love to have you guys on and just do like a deep dive because you guys both have pretty interesting jobs and careers and pasts, but we're going to half-ass it instead and just introduce you. So
hell yeah.
Making his triumphant return to the podcast, astute listeners might remember him from E3, I want to say, what was the E3 that No Man's Sky was announced? 2013?
That was the Game Awards, but...
I'm sorry, that was shown first at and the Sony stage show. Let's just call it 2013 and maybe be
was
wrong.
Was that the Ryan Payton?
I don't know what you're talking about, but our guest is Greg Double Fine Rice.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
I'm back in Japan.
Back and in Japan for the very first time.
I know, man. It's crazy. I can't believe it.
We're going to talk a lot about that, but what are you here for? What the hell are you doing here?
Well, technically Bit Summit in a week, but mm-hmm. I've never been, so I was like, I have to come for at least 2 weeks, see everything, eat everything. And
you're staying a little bit afterwards even, right?
Yeah. So a week here in Tokyo, which just started yesterday and feels like it's been a week already. And then Kyoto for Bit Summit and like a whole other week after that. It's gonna be nuts.
It's awesome that you guys you got it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So you are like you're right and we record right at prime jet lag time. We do that on purpose.
Yeah, I might fall asleep.
Keep
we'll
guests
see.
Off guard or whatever. Yeah.
You hear snoring.
But we super appreciate having you. And so finally our other special guest, filmmaker, artist, game creator, friend of the show. I'm just gonna make that assumption and just say friend of the show because that's what we do here.
Everyone's our
show. That is David O. Fuck you, shithead, fuckface, fuckhead, Riley.
I like that. Yeah. Hello, hi.
How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
I come for free with Greg.
That's is that how that happens?
I'm
you guys are
bonus.
2-for-1 pack. You're like an amiibo, like that the Fire Emblem pack where
exactly.
you guys come built in. David, people probably most recently will be thinking about you for everything.
For everything.
Everything.
Yes.
Your new game, everything.
New game, everything.
And also everything that you've done up until now, including, Mountain? Was your previous foray into
Mountain,
gaming?
Mountain, first effort in games.
First effort in games. And then before that?
A blur of
drugs and sex and women and
nightmares,
Hollywood,
just pills,
nightmares,
yeah,
felt
debt,
velvet pajama type things, all of that.
Yeah, I don't remember much of it, but yeah, it's been a strange path. Now on a video game podcast with you fine people.
That's right.
But I didn't know
your
what
life
happened.
Get you here? Yeah.
Well, weirdly, I kind of did before I did a short. I was doing interactive things. We don't have to get into that. But I was doing. I used to use a software called Blender.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Blender. Mm. It had a real real time engine, way like long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always just sort of been there and. Now I'm sort of in games.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you did, and my reference was that you worked on Spike Jonze's Her movie, right?
As correct.
The game.
Okay.
So did you do all of the games in that?
No. I was brought on initially to take care of this alien child, these parts, and then I got to recommend my pal Kevin Dart, who did the forget what it's called.
The mom simulator game. Thing?
Yeah.
Which was also amazing. Fucking brilliant.
Really good. Yeah. Really good, yeah.
He's Steven Universe background stuff now.
Right? Oh, yes, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Kevin Dart is an amazing artist. He's always just been an incredible guy. Art directed the Powerpuff Girls reboot, if anybody's seen that.
Hmm.
And does tons of illustration and great stuff. And yeah.
So why don't we start there? I want to talk. I mean, I can talk to both of you guys about everything because, of course, Double Fine published it, and Greg, you guys are publishing a lot more stuff these days. What did Nog just come out like last
week?
Yeah,
we've had four games come out this year already,
dude.
Yeah.
So is that you're like I'm out. I'm all four
exactly.
done. Like
yeah.
I get a little break. I have a little window. Like you guys have been busy.
Yeah, there was one period where we had like seven internal games and four external games at Double Fine.
Wow.
And we've just been like slowly kind of shipping them one by one. And finally, this is like the longest period where we have nothing to ship.
Right.
That I can remember actually.
Perfect fit. Primo
yeah,
vacation
like
time.
Out.
And you just had Amnesia Fortnite too,
mm-hmm.
right? Which I was enjoying the videos coming out of that.
Yeah.
I think it was a good year. Those two player guys, like, I don't know how the hell they do that.
Yeah, with one person down too. One of their guys was picked to lead a project.
Actually, yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, how the fuck they turn that stuff around? Like 30 minutes of really well edited, like poignant, like has a beginning, middle, and end almost to every episode. Like,
yeah. Well,
those,
they're still working on it. But
okay,
yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
It was a little slower this time, but
sure, exactly.
to be expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were they at, like, day seven or so?
Yeah,
now?
I think seven might have just come out.
Okay.
Yeah, so three more to go.
No spoilers, Greg. Don't spoil it.
You can play them all now. They're all out. So.
I'm not seeing a lot of my favorite Double Fine cast member in these videos, though.
There's a lot of new people at Double Fine.
I know, but but there's no, like, there's very little Greg Rice.
Yeah, I didn't do a lot on Amnesia Fortnite because I was shipping games. We shipped two games during it, but...
I saw that, too. Yeah, that happened in the episode. It was like, God damn, I feel sorry for the guys who have to be... What was it? It was Full Throttle remastered.
Full Throttle
launched.
Came out, and then Everything PC was during...
right, and Everything PC. So the gap between PS4 and PC was only, like, what, a couple weeks?
It was a month.
So? It was a month, okay.
Yeah, yeah, because of, like, Sony helped it with the pub fund, this thing they have, so they got a month for that, which was good because we actually only, I mean, we're a two-person team, and we needed this time to actually get it working on PC and do all that jazz.
Which is amazing, like, any game that is made by two people is fucking...
I mean, it's like we have also people doing sound and music.
But the core
development is myself. Yeah.
So actually, let's just talk about everything then. I do want to talk about Her and the other stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
Just as the most like the most recent thing.
Yeah.
So it's out on PC now.
Yes.
Steam.
We got PC, Mac, Linux. PS4.
Nice.
And yeah, launched on PS4 and then just recently out on Steam.
And you've been working on that for at least a few years. Because when we first saw it, it was at Day of the Devs.
It was like 2 years
two
ago.
Year, two, GDCs 2 years ago.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
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 And like one of the things I loved about that debut, because that was the first time that we saw it, it was seeing the animation. And if anybody listening to this hasn't heard of Everything or doesn't, go and Google
Everything game.
Yeah.
Pardon, go ahead. What were we going to say?
No. Yeah, the trailer, it was like a 10-minute trailer, which I think is also was like really brilliant. But it gives you, I think, a really good idea of of all of what it is, which is hard to do because it's a very unique, like, different game than anything. It's like, I would imagine, kind of hard to describe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But during that presentation, somebody asked, like, the animation for a lot of the animals is like, they're like, dice. Yeah. And they like kind of flip on their side. And everybody was like enamored with it, loved it. And somebody asked, like, hey, is that animation placeholder or is that by design? And you said, no, that's absolutely by design. And you got like spontaneous like round of applause. Like,
oh, right.
Everybody really loved that. It's like so much of a personality. And I imagined like a brilliant way of taking something that would be like a restraint where it's like, we have how many objects do you have in the game? Do you know?
There's individual objects is over 3,000.
Okay.
But the collectible, like things that you become are organized into groups, that's less than that because you might have variations of a thing.
Sure. But of those things, I mean, over 1,000 things that you can even control. To animate, and some of them do animate uniquely, I noticed, right? They don't all animate in that style.
That's right, yeah. They're all using sort of just procedural ways of moving around. Yeah.
Right.
And lots of things will move around by flying. Like, just in general, when you're thinking about simulating the universe, loads of things just fly, which is the easiest kind of motion to create in a game. But then when the most complex thing is an animal, like, walking.
Right.
And it was always just a given that, like, oh, this is going to be how the animals move, because otherwise this whole other all the other stuff going on in the game is impossible.
But you took stop there. A restraint and made it like a stylistic choice, right? Like you basically said, okay, if we have to figure out some way of doing this, let's like turn a negative into a positive, I think.
Absolutely. Just like Pitbull says, you know, I like to take a negative and turn it into a positive.
Is this inspired? Is it true that the game was inspired mostly by Pitbull?
By Mr. 305, Mr. Worldwide, Dale.
Yeah.
What else? mainly Pitbull inspired game.
Right. Well, so I was saying it is a hard game to describe, but I'm sure you have had to describe it a million times to a million people. So how would you describe it now for people who aren't familiar with it so far?
It's a nature simulation. It's a game sort of about nature. And where to go from there?
Well,
I'm unrehearsed here. I actually
that's pretty good summary.
It's true that like you spent like from the very beginning of the idea, I spent a long time trying to figure out how like various sentences on how to describe it, and they always feel a little bit uncomfortable. And I usually like one for a week, and then I come back to it, and I'm like, that doesn't quite fit.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're more comfortable showing. You're more comfortable like with a video, or having people play it.
Exactly, or having people just make up their own thing.
Sure,
and that seems like a cop out, but truly, like people have. You can see the Steam reviews, and it's like people have just wildly different interpretations, and they're all great. And for me, it's about nature.
Right.
And when I say nature, like I'm talking about not just like non-man-made things, but also cities and like what basically reality of that how things are arranged in the universe, and it's this very fun sort of intuitive way of just seeing the world from different perspectives and
right
seeing how things relate to each other
right
yeah
and is that what you did it evolve or was that the original idea that you started with, which is like I just want to do this thing where you can go down to a microcosmic level and be, you know, an amoeba or like a sub-atom of an amoeba and then scale up to all animals, to cities, to planets, to galaxies, to like...
Yes.
I'm surprised how much David pitched this first on paper to me. Like, I saw it as a design doc and it's like almost exactly what it sounded like on paper is actually what it ended up becoming.
I think actually the thing is, like, it did kind of arrive as an idea sort of fully formed, and I'm not I write out with both with Mountain and with this, it had a different everything had a different name in the beginning, but basically it's a PDF that exists from the first week of starting it, and it's more or less the same sort of idea. I think it's a very old idea. I don't think it's just like transposing this sort of very old idea into like a new medium, just seeing things from different points of view, and then it's like thinking that idea through, and then like you said, that simple thing of just being like, okay, well, let's like try and see things from like that cup's point of view and that insect's point of view and that Adam's point of view and then all the way up.
Right.
And that instantly creates like a million things to do in terms of like developing a project. And then there's definitely sort of like other things that came out of it because of your, it's all systems. It's all like, which I think is the most exciting thing about games for me. Mm-hmm. These just creating these systems and having them play out and do things that you couldn't quite see or couldn't foresee. So when we started building it just to exist and just to have all these objects in the correct order in the right place, mm-hmm. suddenly there's all this other stuff you can do for free because they're like arrangements systems of objects place, that know what they are and know you know, right, you know, right, know what right. you are and so on. And like because all of that existed, yeah, there's all this sort of like cool other reactions and relationships that things can have and possibilities to make it sort of more procedural and sandboxy. And
did you, so the one of the things I think, well, and yeah, just to expand a little bit on what you're saying, one of the interesting things about the game is anything that you are has its own like monologue, basically, right?
Yes. Oh yeah, I should subscribe because so, yeah, go ahead.
But so I was curious, and a lot of them are, I mean, they run the range from like kind of mundane to like very profound and also weird and just all
silly,
the whole gamut. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was curious who wrote those.
That was me.
That was all you.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
So I wrote all of them.
Are those
and
dependent
like,
on what you are in at that point in the game, or is there some that can?
There's a bunch of rules,
arranged.
Basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So because we're the thing is, if you talk about this game just in the abstract, it's very hard to visualize it.
Yeah.
So for people unfamiliar, and I think you hinted on it, and I should have said this earlier, the game is basically filled with playable characters. If you think of a game without NPCs, basically, like every single thing you see is a playable character. So it's thousands of playable characters, and the main sort of mechanic is become smaller or become bigger, and so you can enter things larger than you or smaller than you,
right?
And you're playing as the sort of game itself, and you're not limited by being one thing. You can be a tree or a forest or a building or a city or
yep.
whatever. And so the whole thing is based on like sort of recreating the universe as sets of sort of groups of things that are sort of involved in with each other. And so things can have anything can have a thought bubble, and you go up and read its thought,
right?
And So yeah, there's all sorts of rules. I mean, you know, it's finite, but it has like procedural elements to it that
sure.
sort of make it more infinite. So like things are talk about the weather,
right?
And then to talk about their own problems or talk about you or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and they're just and also they include short pieces of philosophy
right.
that I really loved and I felt. Like the quite old idea thoughts that I thought this is still true and it's amazing and it's, you know, something that's helpful.
Yeah.
I basically rewrote those and in a kind of less sort of ornate language and then converted them. So like if somebody was talking about like man or oneself, I would replace it with like, so it's like people talk about turtles or
right,
whatever
right,
or like
right, yeah.
you know rocks
yeah, yeah
and they're speaking they're that's the philosophy from their point of view
sure
and so it's also sort of selecting things that are true from any perspective from whoever's speaking it and so there was sort of a conversion process there in taking these really old ideas that I loved
right
that I thought were practical and useful and probably unlike what I think people think of as philosophy or think
right.
of as you know, it's not like this tract. It's not this like sort of screed or this complex essay in any way. It's more like, oh well, this is actually just like a beautiful idea about how to approach a certain problem or whatever. It's still very valid and relevant. And
that's cool. Well, yeah. This is now we're getting into what because there's a lot more actually just with everything that I would love to talk about, including like. How the game plays itself and all of the options that you made for that, which I think is super interesting. And
you really played it.
What's that?
You really played it. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. No, of course.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, we've talked about it actually on the podcast a couple times, I think. But we're going to move on to talk about like chocobos and stupid shit like that.
Great.
I think, unfortunately.
That's another podcast.
That's okay. Yeah. Greg, I did want to talk to you about a little bit about everything and how you guys just got hooked up. And I mean, you guys are now here. And then I also wanted to hear about Japan. You guys are here like traveling buddies.
Yeah, no, I mean, we also worked with David on Mountain. So
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, so I think just before Mountain came out, I just met up with David and showed it. He showed it to me and it immediately clicked. And I was a big fan of the stuff he'd been doing in animation. Not just the Her stuff, but his original shorts that he made, things like the Adventure Time short too.
Did you work on Tim and Eric stuff at any point?
I did a project with them, weirdly game related, which was a very strange trailer for Saints Row the Third.
Ah, yes. What was it? It was like a game show.
Yes, it was a game show. It was a 30-minute commercial.
Yes. What was it called?
If I remember correctly, it was Genki's Super Reality something.
Right.
And I had just moved to America, and then they brought me in to help write on this thing, and then do this animated sequence inside that. So that was our they're friends of mine, but that was the only project that we worked together on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But no, I mean, we're excited about new people coming to games and bringing new ideas, and you know, we just could get really bogged down in the same genres we've been making forever and ever. So it's exciting to see somebody come from outside like this with something totally new. And I mean, that's the thing with Double Hard Presents in general. There's, I think, two things we've been doing. One is recognizing people who we've been friends with for a long time that have been already like really strong voices, people like Rex, who made Tearaway and Little Big Planet, and now making Knights and Bikes with us. And then also just looking for new people who have interesting things to say. And that's, kind of like everything, but also Nog and the Gang Beast guys. And that's one of the main reasons I want to come here for BitSummit is just... Japan's been killing it with games this year. It's been crazy how many good Japanese games have been coming out. And
it has been, right? It took a while. There was a long, dark valley, a long tea time of the soul.
The prophet Inafune foretold the end of the Japanese world at one point. But we bounced back.
But he was on point there for a few years. I mean, it was just
sort of...
It was like wandering in the valley, you know? It was like, I mean... Who made, was it Koei who made a fucking Gears of War wannabe game? Right. Remember that piece of shit?
Yes. No, like, are you talking about Sega?
Identity Crisis?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
No, I'm not talking about what was the game with the cyborgs? That game was actually okay.
Yeah, I hear that's actually pretty good.
It was the Yakuza team.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that game was
Binary Domain.
No, there was a like Gears of War ripoff from them.
Koei, right?
I forget the name.
Anyway, don't do it to yourself.
It doesn't matter.
It's not worth it.
It doesn't matter.
It's not worth it. Anyway, the point is...
Japan has bounced back.
It was kind of an identity crisis. And I mean, some places did go away. It's not like, everybody figured it out.
It was a little bloody.
It's kind of like a boutique market nowadays. You don't... Like, if you're not making porn games, then it's, you know...
Or cell phone games, which I'm not sure...
Well, it just took them a lot... As with anything, I mean, this is also probably a whole podcast on its own, but like, as with anything, Japan sort of struggled to keep up with the changes that happened, but they eventually caught up, or maybe technology itself got easy enough that they were able to handle it, because for a while they just couldn't handle the tech.
That's part of it.
And I think they retreated into doing what they knew how to do, which is 2D things, and that's why cell phone games and everything became such a huge thing here, because they were able to do that and capitalize on that and make money that way. But I feel like now that the tech is manageable and engines make it easier to handle, like, really nice looking games and stuff that you know... Now we're seeing games like developers like Platinum or, you know, these other guys in Japan who are actually making, you know, quote unquote AAA games that actually compete. And, you know, I don't think their creativity ever went away. I think they just basically didn't have the tools or the people to kind of put those games together.
Especially the big guys already this year, like with the Zeldas and Mario Karts and the Personas and Gravity Rush has just been like so many things. Yakuza, you mentioned. But I'm excited just to see now. I feel like a lot of the indie stuff I know from Japan is actually just expat people I know that have moved over here. And there's exceptions to that. But I want to see the like young, new indie kids that are doing crazy things over here.
It is still foreigner heavy, foreigner flavored in the indie scene here. But I mean, part of what we've been trying to do, part of what BitSummit has been trying to do also, right, is like nurture like the local talent, getting people who are experienced. I mean, what a lot of it is like experienced devs from experienced studios breaking off and doing their own thing, right? Yeah. That's how a lot of good indie stuff started in America. And then kids in school start to see, oh, I know that guy. And they start to see examples of people who have done it and they can just go straight into it from school. But like, I think more of that stuff does need to happen. Part of that is cultural. Part of it is just slow to get off the ground. But slowly but surely, yeah, there are some things happening. And then there are exceptions coming up, you know, Maupin with Downwell. And, you know, of course, there's the Cave Story guys. And anyway, this is the Getting into the Bit Summit podcast, which we should do next time. Because, yeah, so you guys are going to be heading to Kyoto for Bit Summit, right?
Yeah, in a week.
Yep.
In a week, which is next weekend. John, you're
going
to be there.
I'm going. Yep. Yep. Fifth Bit Summit. This is crazy. That's right. That's been going for 5 years already.
Their logo, is it?
It's a different logo every year.
It's like a fifth of Bit Summit or something. Like, I can't read it right. I've seen it a million times.
You're not supposed to be able to read it right. Okay. It's abstract.
You specifically. It was made for you to not be able to read it correctly.
Send your complaints to James Milkey. No, it's cool. They're like creative and they're different and they're trying to... You can't fault them for what they're trying to do. They're trying to basically, you know, as Greg said, like basically find the local talent, maybe pull them out from behind the rocks they hide behind,
right,
because they do
out of
here.
The doujin ghetto.
And get them, and get them to kind of put their games on display. It's
so
exciting.
So you guys now, first time in Japan, Greg. David, you've been here a few times, but never just for fun, always for work?
That's right, yeah. I've never... just come to just enjoy it, and
you've never gone anywhere as an adult just to
enjoy. I've never had a vacation.
Correct?
I don't think that's unusual or anything. Like, you know, when you're young, you're just working all the time, and I just never. It always was such a luxury to just go somewhere on pure vacation.
Sure.
And this was possible for a few reasons. One was like Greg has this. You know, Greg needed vacation. We both just sort of been through so much like intense work stuff, and had this sort of window. I really need. I was going crazy.
Towards
the end.
Shipped
a game, and it was intense. And I also had a bunch of miles built up from, you know, and it was just like my. It was easy. It
timing,
was just
perfect timing.
Nice.
Really good timing.
Nice.
And it's just really nice. It's just really. I mean, I've always loved this city so much, and to be able. Yeah, I mean, we just started. Like, it's been like what 24 hours.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And yeah, it's just fully...
I'm trying to mostly treat it like vacation, too. I mean, even Bit Summit, I mean, they're taking
there's
care of us
there.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Like, they're setting up our space. I'm just bringing some games and hanging out. I mean, I'm mostly just excited to take in the culture and meet people. And...
So, first 24 hours, give me highlight impressions. Oh, any just like, wait,
it's
what?
Insane.
What the... What? Like...
It feels like a different world. It feels so foreign to me. I mean, I've loved the culture, and I'm a fan of things that come out of here. But I'm surprised how different it feels as soon as you land. Just the way it smells and the colors and the lights. And I was struck by how clean everything is, how quiet it is. It's crazy how there's not honking horns all the time.
That's true. Yeah, you never fucking hear. I ride a bike, and sometimes it's like. I did something stupid. That car almost hit me or whatever, and they still won't honk the horn at you, which is great. Yeah. I love it. But just, that's true. I didn't even think about it.
They only honk if you die.
Right, exactly.
I like that you mentioned the smell, too, because when I first came here, that was the thing that actually stuck out to me. Japan has its own unique smell. And then every time I would come back, because we would come twice a year for the game shows and stuff, I'd be like, smells like Japan.
So
like,
specifically, Shibuya has its own
Well, I'm not talking about that kind of smell, but I just mean in
something
general.
Something
get used to it.
That we talked about just recently, kind of related to that. Graham, you got those Suikoden books off of Yahoo Auctions one yen or
one
something?
One in each, yep.
Yep, they came out in what, the early 90s?
I know.
Late 90s.
Yeah, late 90s.
Late 90s, okay. And I smelled those books, and it was like, I was saying to John, this smells like the Tokyo Pop office that we used to, when we came to Tokyo in the late 90s, it smelled like this. And I was like, that's so weird. Why would that be the case? I think it's just old tatami mat smell.
Maybe.
I think that's what that smell is. I think I've identified what that is. Anyway, but this, I love hearing about this kind of stuff, because once you're here for a while, you forget some of these sorts of things. But another thing that I know when a lot of my family came here a couple years ago that they all remarked that I'd kind of forgotten about. I don't know if you've noticed this, but the amount of masks that people are wearing.
Yes.
It's probably more so in the winter than now that it's getting warmer. But I always forget that's not a thing a lot of times you see on TV and movies and stuff like that. But just ordinary people walking around wearing little kind of surgical mask type things for various reasons.
I think I also just love how consistently across everything there's such a attention to design and to simplicity and everything. It's really refreshing because everything just looks like this perfect little morsel,
That's right, perfect morsels all
wrapped.
I know exactly what you're talking about, though. Yeah, but then it's
attention
packaged
to detail
50 different times. Like
you buy a thing of cookies, and every single cookie is individually wrapped and
I literally
handled with care. And it's like, this is nice.
What was I buying? I was buying something from Caldi, and the woman like didn't understand how I could possibly not want it in its own separate. Oh, it was like one of those little like cheese and olive oil and olive packs. I don't know if anybody
like a Lunchable sort of.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And you like mix it in with hummus or whatever. And I was buying a Caldi, and I'm like, no, I don't need any bags. And she's like, okay. And then like, but takes that one and is like, that one's definitely going into a bag because what if it pops open and leaks, you know, olive oil? And
yeah.
It's like, no, that one too, that's not in a bag. And she's like, looked at me with this like blank look, like it's like I just said, I don't want any, you know, keep the change or something like that. It's
which
like
is a, also weird. No one tips or anything.
Yeah. No tipping.
Yeah. Thank
and
God
the service
for that.
Still service is amazing, right?
Yeah. And like, no garbage cans. That was interesting. But there's garbage, no trash anywhere.
That's a big one. I've heard different
garbage
reasons
cans are
for
hard
that.
To find.
Well, it was after the sarin gas.
Back in the day, that was the going thing. I think it's a little. It's been a long time now for that still to be a valid like reason. But well, yeah, back in the day, like there was like a, because like people were worried about, I guess, getting exploding garbage cans or something.
No, well, there was the
poison
in the 90s.
There was that too, yeah.
But yeah, but I don't think there were ever a ton of them, but sometimes you end up like, you start thinking about it because when you buy a pet bottle, you're like, I own this. Like, I have to think about where I'm going to get rid of this or like keep it in my bag or like garbage. Mm-hmm. It's not. And yet, ironically, there's not a lot of garbage.
That's
around,
why so. A bag get, is a necessity.
Get ready for food, man. That's the best thing about this place. There's so much good food.
Yeah, what have you guys done so far?
First thing, I went straight to ramen.
Nice.
And it was delicious. It was amazing. What else have we done? We did. We had
breakfast at the Tokyo the Excelsior Hotel, which has this beautiful view out onto the city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the
curry lunch.
Oh yes, we went to Tokyo Hands, of course.
Yep,
and ate there, which is a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at the top floor?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know they.
Yeah,
had
they got
that
they have
there.
A cafe up there.
Yeah. Oh,
nice. Okay.
Yeah, we got lots of plans to eat.
Cool.
Lots of eating plans. I'm excited we're doing a kaiseki meal. I'm excited about that.
Oh, very cool.
That'll be nice.
Is that here or is that in Kyoto?
That'll be in Kyoto. We'll buy on.
Oh, nice.
Fun.
Friend of the show.
Yeah.
What did you play on the way here? Did you play anything? Zelda?
On my Switch, yep.
Nice.
Yep.
What about Mario Kart?
Mario Kart. Yeah, we're playing Mario Kart a lot in the office. People are bringing Switches.
Let's talk about Mario Kart. We haven't talked about that. JJ, you've been playing it. John, you've been playing it. Tell me about Mario Kart. I haven't played it at all.
It's the best Mario Kart. I love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I played it on Wii U all the time, too. And then my Wii U broke right before the DLC came out. So I have this nice package of like getting to play all the DLC maps. And
the DLC
and
maps are so good.
The DLC
especially
is really good.
The F-Zero track. Oh, so good.
The F-Zero is awesome. And the Zelda stuff is awesome. And like everything is like... Because that the graphical, like... I don't know, the art style, the art direction of that game is so good, and it brings every world to life, and it's all 60 frames a second, so it's really nice. So, like, the Zelda stuff looks awesome, the Animal Crossing stuff looks awesome, like, everything is so good.
It makes you want a game of all of those in that art style.
Yeah. It's kind of, like, shocking that they didn't put any of those characters in Mario Kart until now. It's like, now they just need to be in all
it
of them.
It just seems like, why wasn't it a Smash Brothers sort of deal?
Yeah.
Like, the arcade version, even, is the one that's released by Namco Bandai, has Pac-Man in it.
Right.
And stuff. Cool. So they should just go that route with the console game.
So
too.
What's good about it for people who didn't play
battle
the Wii
back.
U version?
A real fucking battle
they
mode.
They fixed it, right? What was the problem with the old
it
battle
was just,
mode?
You
there
would just take
one.
The yeah, you yeah, basically you were put on a regular circuit track.
Which is huge.
I mean, there was one, right? There was
yeah,
something
there was,
called battle
but it,
mode, but
it
wasn't
really
a battle
really
mode.
It was, yeah, it was like, oh,
standard,
shit, we forgot the battle mode.
Same
battle
rules,
mode.
But you're like literally on this giant-ass track, which is obviously is not fun for... That's a mode that's meant to be played in like arena style,
right.
You know?
So they fixed that.
They put it back in. You got your regular, like, you know, get your items and shoot other people version. You've got some of these I didn't know about because I guess I didn't play Double Dash... And I didn't play the Wii one that much, but there's like one where it's like cops and robbers, and one group has like a Paku Paku flower. What are they called in English?
Piranha plant?
Piranha plant,
thank you,
yeah.
Because I forgot to.
And another group is like the robbers who have to just run away from the people with the piranha plants.
Oh, okay.
And like then when you catch them with a piranha plant, they're in jail until someone like breaks them out and stuff like that. There's one where you just like collect bombs and just, there's like bombs being thrown all over the place.
Mm. Are you mostly playing these online or are you playing locally with your family?
I'm playing Mostly locally with my family. Haruki's playing online mostly.
And the kids are into it, I'm assuming?
They love it.
Big time?
And they, so yeah, this is the other thing is they added a kind of almost like an autoplay, like auto-accelerate and auto-steering.
Whoa, really?
They added a, an assist mode. Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I mean, people seem to really like it.
Can you use it in multiplayer?
It'll like help you from not falling off the side of the course, or like if you're about to crash into something, it'll move you around it. You literally cannot press a button,
and it will get you to the...
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to. I mean, if you're a good Mario Kart player, you're turning it all off. Yeah.
It's for...
Baby mode.
Two-year-olds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Toma, this is...
It keeps you on the track. It doesn't put you in first place.
This is Toma's first video game now. He's able to play it. You know, he, like, doesn't know how to work anything, but he's able to get from the beginning of a race to the end and feel like he's done something.
Oh, okay.
And so that's for cool. that reason alone, it's just like, okay, well, this is a great, like... wholesome way to get
you're not a believer in the harsh like throw them into the deep end school Mario Kart kids raising.
Well, I know a lot of gamer parents are like, I'm gonna start them on the NES. Well, kids fucking don't like that shit. They look at it and it's like, why? It's like your parents didn't you start start you out with the talkies and shit like that. Like, you know, you didn't start with like
back in our day, maybe JJ, yeah, but
all that shit. You like watched fucking the Goonies and you fucking loved it. So like, you know, kids want to play what's new and cool and
what their friends are playing.
What their friends are playing, what their older brother has,
right?
And so this was a great way to introduce Toma.
But I think the best thing about, I mean, for me, the best thing about it, and that's making me play it more than I would have otherwise, is just the fact that it's on Switch and it's portable. Because like my favorite Mario Kart was, I think it was DS, like the one where like everybody got together in a room and could just like instantly start up like an 8-player match. And with Switch, and I only tried it for the first time the other night, right after you left, Mark. John, a friend of ours, John, busted out a Switch and like just took the things off, and then we were, and then another guy had a Switch, he took their things off, and then instantly we're playing 4-player Mario Kart.
Screens are so small.
It's not, DS was fine. This is like three times that size. Like it's nice.
Yeah, and usually you got your own Switches, right?
Yeah.
And so everybody's got their own screen.
You were sharing it.
We were sharing.
Though,
right? But even that was awesome. Like I didn't even. Wow. Now that you mention it, I literally not even once thought about the screen size until you just brought it up. Like you don't notice it when you're playing. It looks really good. It's super smooth. But that's the best part about it. It's just you can just bust it out and have a match
you
anywhere
at any time.
Had a little
Nintendo commercial right there.
Basically, like we were all Nintendo Karen that night, and it was awesome. It was really fun.
Yeah, and if you haven't played the Wii U one, it is really good. I mean, it's beautiful. Like
it's the best one.
Yeah, yeah, it runs 60 frames. Like the maps are all really great and really well designed. It feels like they all have really interesting flow. It's stripped away a lot of the baggage from Double Dash and things like that just got kind of overcomplicated. It's great. And they also picked really good tracks from old games to bring back and kind of like redo with a new rule set too.
You sound like you know your man who knows his Mario Kart. You've been in
I've played them all. I have played them all, yes.
Was Double Dash, is that kind of, as somebody...
Some people love it.
Some people love it, but to you that was like a misstep in the...
Yeah, there's things I like about it. It has some good maps, but I think the like two character stuff got kind of confusing. Overwhelming. I liked
Does game
64
game
and Super Nintendo, and you're right. Yeah. The DS stuff was fun, just for the same reason the Switch one is.
Yeah, exactly.
Have they announced DLC for that?
They should. I hope so.
Well, not new DLC, because all the Wii U DLC is just in there from the beginning. Right. That was almost weird to me. Like, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but the Switch one, everything is unlocked except for like the parts for the carts and stuff. But like all the characters and all the courses are available immediately, so you don't have to unlock them,
which is great.
I like it.
Well, that is great if you played the game before, for sure. Like, I mean, I think it's kind of fun to like play and unlock new stuff. So for that reason, I hope they do make more DLC to like give you new stuff to explore and open up. But it's great.
What about the online, like online lobbies and playing online Switch stuff? I haven't done any online Switch.
It's all
playing.
There, but I haven't really done much.
I have been. I was doing it on Wii U too. Wii U had online for Mario Kart. And
sure, but I mean with the Switch, right? Like if the online wasn't. Are you using the app and stuff?
No, there is no app. That's not out yet.
That's not until summer.
Oh God.
But the online works really well. Actually, I was reading a bunch of reviews and stuff, and people were not. Via the Switch, no.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So there's like little pre-made responses you can kind of choose.
Yeah. How is Mario Kart's like easy to play
a game
with
where
friends?
You really need to talk to people though. So
it's not need to talk to people. You're playing with your friends. You want to talk to them.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, there's you can play with like anyone, or you can play with just like friends, or the interface,
all the UI, all that stuff is real smooth. It's fine.
I mean, it's more or less
from what I saw. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Stuff. Yeah. I mean, this seems like one of the maybe rare-ish cases where they definitely got the online stuff right, I think. You know, like, nobody, I haven't seen many people complaining about Mario Kart online stuff. So.
Cool.
I think I'm more complaining about the system leak stuff. I had a lot of disconnections just from us trying to get 8 switches.
Yeah, we had that actually too. The first time we played, like, it disconnected, and then after that it was smooth. But like, I've seen people talking about that too. That's weird.
Because you're playing at the office.
Is it great? Yeah. There's like a lot of wireless devices and stuff like that.
I think so. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Anything else on Mario Kart? Any last parting words? Anybody?
Dry Bones is back.
That's your boy.
Yeah.
Really?
And Baby Park is back, which is cool.
You were done with Mario. Are you going to play Mario Kart? No. And the next day, I'm like, I look on my friends list. Who's playing Mario Kart? It's Graham.
I don't own it.
Wow, wow.
It wasn't me.
Wait, what?
You saw somebody else. I don't own it.
Wasn't
really?
Me.
Yeah.
But you haven't played the Switch one?
No.
So there's like another Graham on my friends list. Yeah, somebody's impersonating you.
I'm just excited that Dry Bones is back.
All right. Also, it has 3 Rainbow Roads.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
And the Splatoon characters, you get 3 different skin choices with the Splatoon characters, which means it's the first, like, black humanoid character in a Mario Kart game.
All right.
Which is kind of crazy when you think about it.
Wait, what? The Splatoon characters?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was the new thing for Switch,
squids. What are we talking about?
I guess I'm lost. You want to get fucking technical, they are squids, but they have fingers, they have 2 arms and legs like humans.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm confused too, JJ. Doc Lewis should have been in the game a long time ago.
I mean, now, like, the doors have been blown open, like, let's put them all in there. Fucking Piston Honda. Give me every character.
There you go. All the racial
Piston
stereotypes.
Piston Honda the black man. Yeah. Get him in there.
Well, no, I just, any other character from a Nintendo game.
I don't know if you want to go back to many of those Punch-Out characters, JJ. I'm not sure that's going to be the, like, love.
Well, that's why I used
Rainbow Gang.
That's why I used Piston Honda, because it's Nintendo and they're allowed.
There should be a Punch-Out cart. Get Vodka Drunkinsky, one of those.
Jesus Christ. Vodka Drunkinsky? What are you talking
about? That's Soda Popinski's Japanese name.
Oh, fuck.
Vodka Drunkinsky.
Wow. Censorship.
Even better. What else? John, your Switch, you've been playing what? I Am Setsuna, you've been playing?
I picked up I Am Setsuna because I just wanted something else to play after Zelda. Not that I'm, like, done with Zelda by any means, but no. I finished the main story, so, like, I just took a break. And we talked about it before when it came off PS4, so I won't talk about it too much. Just say it's, like, a kind of classic, you know, top-down RPG. Some people likened it to Chrono Trigger, which is just bullshit. Don't do that. It's not even on the same planet as Chrono Trigger.
It's
like, it's basically a solid, like, super generic, and I mean super generic. Like, I don't know if everybody understands Acme references. Are we too old for that? Like, but, like, you know, yeah, it's like Acme RPG, basically. You know, it's
right.
Like, and there's
Acme
nothing wrong.
Acme JRPG.
Acme JRPG, yeah. It's just right. Like, every element of it is, like, super basic old school RPG. And the story and the writing are just sort of eh. So, like, I don't know. People warned me about it, but I bought it anyway. And I'm playing it.
How much was it?
10 bucks? 40 bucks. No, it's like 40 or 50 bucks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But, it's I don't want to, like, say it's not garbage or anything. It's, like, it's what I think it should have been, like, $20. It's, like, it's like a pretty old-school game that's super by the books and doesn't really do anything new or interesting. It's not like it's got, like, this, you know, amazing localization or anything. Like, there's nothing about it that stands out that you'd be like, okay, I'm going to play it, even though it's generic. So
the music's pretty good.
Yeah, the music's all right. It's, like, just a bunch of piano tracks. So that's it's true. Like, they didn't, the budget, it seems like every aspect of the game had a super low budget, and they tried their best with that.
I'm just wondering, where do the Chrono Trigger comparisons come from?
Because you could do, like, cross attacks and
stuff. Oh, like, there's double text?
Like, but it's, like, super basic. It's not even, like... Yeah, it's not. It's no Chrono Trigger. But
did you also buy Blazing Star?
I did
on your
buy Blazing Star. Come on, man, that's a sequel to Polestar.
No, I know. I'm just surprised at you. Like,
you know, we've been like our type and like Polestar fans from like way back in the day.
Sure,
we had
it
at the office at EGM.
I've never known you to be like a shooter guy though.
Back in the day, I was super into shooters, but it just sort of. I mean,
there
shooters kind of went away.
Polestar machine at.
There was a Polestar.
The
well, we had the cart, not for the home cart. Like we had the what were they called again? The arcade carts for Neo Geo. I forgot.
MVS.
Yeah, we had the MVS cart.
Okay.
But Blazing Star, a sequel to Polestar, it feels a little more like. If Polestar was like our type, I would say Blazing Star is like Thunder Force. Like it's a little bit more of an action shooter, I guess.
Interesting.
Hard as balls, man. Like
yeah.
I mean, you can
That's
get
what's good
infinite
about those games, though.
Credits.
That's the problem. That is a problem. I think that is a legitimate problem because there's no
well
without any difficulty continue at any time.
You can limit yourself by not giving your 7 scripts. But I mean, if you want to give
on.
Somebody like a classic arcade game on emulation,
limit yourself like. That never happens.
Yeah,
you have to come up with some arbitrary rule.
Okay, well, you say you say it's a problem, but what's the solution? Don't let you continue? I mean,
No. Like, my thing is it's the part of the developer's job to set a like, even giving two options, like, give a, like, unlimited continues option, and then the, like, hey, this is what we think you should be able to continue to beat it on, and that's usually, like, a...
It's got all the,
like,
dip switches and stuff, so you probably can go in and set that. I actually don't even know. There's tons of customization and stuff. All right, but
well,
I mean,
well, hold out.
You could always put in more coins, though. Like, even if
yeah,
you set
well,
the dip
well,
switches.
No,
yes.
But, well, like,
but he
some
needs
of the
like limit that
games,
even.
Yeah, the home version would limit you on continues. Oh, okay. It'd be different from the arcade version.
But
so.
it's really good. I mean, it's I like it. It's a fun old school side scrolling shooter. It's just super hard. Like, I can't see how anyone, because you can play two players simultaneous too, which is nice. And again, like with Switch,
that's
because you can just rip the controllers off and do that anywhere. You can actually
that's interesting
get something out of that. But it's incredible. Like, the last couple stages are just you die like every 10 seconds, even if you're amazing. Like.
There's a way to do it.
But it's probably like that had to be the only game you owned for like 5 months to learn every pattern.
I think if you walked up to R-Type today,
this is way harder than R-Type.
I think you would be like, this game is impossible.
No. Yes, but R-Type is patterns. So R-Type, there is absolute.
But this game is patterns too.
It's like if somebody threw like a giant box of rice at you and they were all bullets and you had to somehow evade all of them. Like, it's like crazy.
So it's a bullet hell style game. Because Polestar was not that.
It's not what I think of as bullet hell, but I mean, yeah, there are parts where they're just like spraying shit at you, and you have to have, and your ship is kind of big, and like these things are tiny, and you have to like,
but that's
really maneuver to get out of the way.
But that's the trick with bullet hell shooters, the like, the thing that opens your mind once you finally realize that bullet hell shooters, there's only a very small kernel inside your ship that actually has like.
But you ever notice that bullet hell shooters are mostly vertical because it gives you more room to actually think and react? This is a horizontal shooter, so it's like you don't have a lot of space or time to think.
Sometimes they make it pretty easy to understand. Like if you're playing Death Smiles, like it came out in the arcade on the Xbox 360, it's horizontal too, but they have like whenever a bullet gets close to you, you start to shine. And it shines right around where your actual hitbox is. So they make it easier to understand
that's
in
smart.
Newer games.
That's
yeah.
that's the usual I've never heard game shooters.
Really? But there's six or seven different ships that you can choose from, and they're all kind of different loadouts and everything. So, like, you know, it's there's probably ways if you spend a lot of time with it. I spend a couple hours with it, but I like it. I love those kind of games. So
I love that.
It's
I'm a huge Polestar fan. I always wanted Blazing Star. Maybe I'll buy it.
They died too soon. Like, R-Tape Final and Gradius 5 came out pretty close to each other, and they were both amazing. And then that genre just kind of like went away.
R-Type Final was unbelievable. Ihander was unbelievable. Gradius 5.
It was good. It was really good. You should go back and check it out. It was amazing.
Wait a minute.
I liked it.
What?
Yeah, no.
Gradius 5 is amazing.
That was the treasure one. You're not thinking of 4,
right? But there was no balance to it. There was no, like, here's how to, like, get through it. Like, there was no difficulty balance to it. It was, you just
had
to,
are you saying,
like,
it was too easy or too hard?
It was way too hard. You had to just continue the shit out of it. I mean, prove me wrong. Maybe you can. I don't know.
Just go check it out. I mean, like, it's still
like,
it's
I played the shit out of that game.
Like, recently? It's pretty well balanced, I think.
Graham's really good at, like, every video game.
Yeah, Graham, whenever Graham says something is reasonable, just don't listen to him.
Gradius 5, you can do a level with your past self.
Okay.
Your ghost?
Like, with a previous Vic Viper, like, there's an interdimensional time thing where you're playing with
another. Right, right.
Yeah, that was an awesome level.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, production value-wise, level-wise, great, but I couldn't play it. Like, the difficulty was just too random for my taste. What Remains of Edith Finch?
Yeah.
Who's been playing that? I played a bunch of that, too.
Is that the game that sparked all that Twitter stuff about games having stories and getting out of the way and blah, blah, blah?
What?
Ian Bogost guy was like, games shouldn't have stories or something.
Oh, was that?
I think that was, but.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Who cares? Let's
that's
not
a weird thing to say.
Talk about that. Yeah, it was whatever. But.
I don't even want to draw attention to that. That was so stupid. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Finch, it's awesome. Yeah. That game's insane. They've been working on it forever. I played it throughout the years, and it's just like the amount of polish they put in there at the end. That game ended up looking so beautiful, and. It's just, there's nothing else like that. It's the game that, like, most game developers would never make, or they'll tell you never to make, where it's just, like, a million mechanics that are changing. Every level is totally one-off and different from the others.
Yes, and not reused. Right. I'm only a few hours in, but there's already been, like, a lot of bespoke stuff, and you're, like, constantly changing. So, well, I guess just to describe what kind of game it is? Like, how would you describe the genre that it belongs to?
Well, some would say walking sim. I mean, right. It's that, like, narrative
gone
first person
kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's a little bit more, I mean, it's kind of level based, and each room has like a story to tell.
Right.
And each of those kind of plays out in a totally unique way.
There's a family, and you're a member of the family, but also going back and remembering or sometimes finding out about the story of each member of the family. And a lot of times you play through the memory through that family member's perspective, right?
Yeah, it's all like the final moments of their life, right? And everybody dies at the end of their story. Spoilers.
Spoiler!
But not really, because that's the premise of the whole game.
Dies.
I mean, I think it is hard to get into this without too many spoilers, because they are, like, everyone is so unique in mechanics and visual style in some cases. It's a really special game. It's crazy that it got made, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
you've been playing it too, right, Dave?
Yeah, but yeah, I did it in one sitting.
Same.
Which is actually a really nice thing, I think, to be able to have that kind of. I mean, I like both. I like a thing that you just sort of dip in and out of for a couple of weeks, but then to be able to fully explore. And the thing is, I didn't really fully explore it. I think what's so cool about it is, I don't know. I think in so many games, you are just sort of like, gotta go to the next thing, gotta go to the next thing. But there's so much. What I loved about it was the amount of work put into the art direction. And how much story is just put into the actual, yeah, the environments, and it doesn't like, it's not obsessed with realism as much as I think, like, this I don't know, this sort of texture of the world telling you things that are and it's not jumping out at you, it's sort of inviting you to pay attention to it, and you can if you want to, and that I loved how they did the UI elements, that hand, remember that subtle hand thing, and it just feels lovely.
Hand thing are you talking about?
So it's such a minimal UI thing. There is text with narration.
That's one thing that I was going to mention that I thought was interesting. So anytime you're seeing the narrator talk, it's usually, maybe always, actually appearing in letters in the environment, and sometimes you'll do something, open a door or swing something, and it will, like, scatter the letters. So, like, the letters are kind of in the world. But, like, so you're reading but also hearing the narration. But it's giving you more of a feeling like you're reading a book than you probably normally would otherwise if you weren't seeing all the text on the screen. It's very different from subtitles.
It is.
Very different from having just subtitles on the bottom. But
yeah.
But I interrupted you talking about the
I mean,
thing.
You know, it's just the most subtle thing. That's a more kind of, you know, foreground, like clear thing they're doing, but just sometimes it's just a little highlight of a hand. It's just a subtle thing, but it's clear that, like, oh, this is a lot of work and a lot of refinement, and probably took 20 iterations to get this very subtle, just little dot that becomes a hand, and then that hand can be used to open something or do whatever. And it's just a one of those things that, like, you really appreciate when there's so much design and done in something so subtle.
I also felt that, I don't know, because I've been avoiding. I don't want any spoilers or anything like that. So I've just been playing it how I've been playing it. I've not watched any videos, not talked to anybody else really about playing it. But the order that you do things in, I'm assuming, is it feels like it's very organic. It doesn't feel like I'm being led specifically, but I'm also not getting stuck. And so I'm curious to find out later how much of it is you are just kind of free to roam in these different directions, and how much of it is you're actually being guided by it down a path, just you're being guided so well you kind
of
don't
notice it. Is the house is laid up pretty linearly to where you'll kind of come across the levels in the order you're intended to, but I think you can skip every single one. I think you'd run through the whole house and not play a single level again.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, like none of the doors actually seem to lock, I don't think.
Yeah,
it's nice that they did that too in a certain way, because it seems like interactivity is such an interesting subject, and there's a sort of impression I think that everybody has that the more you have, the better. But I never cared too much how much this experience was like on a sort of linear track versus, because you just have the feeling that I don't know where this is going. The same way you're reading a book.
Right.
Well, okay, that's as linear as it comes. You don't really read, you know, you don't jump around the pages, but still you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. I think a lot of that comes from the stories themselves and how they're also surreal and one-off, and you kind of don't know what to expect because the mechanics are changing like every 5 minutes. Suddenly you'll be like playing as a cat, and then something that, like, not only are you a different character, but you're like actually controlling the game in a totally unique way for like a minute maybe, right. And then it's just gone, and you're on to the next thing.
Is it a long game?
Like, yeah, it's like 2 hours probably.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, man, wow.
I would say sit down and play the rest in one go.
I wonder how far I am through it, because I probably played it a couple hours. I mean, I maybe have half of the tree filled out. Sure, yeah.
Did you do the Lewis story?
I'm not sure which one.
It was
good. Spoiler tag now.
I don't know. I don't want to give it away. It's okay. Just it's probably my favorite thing. It's probably the one that it's climactic and wonderful and really eye-opening.
Bad with names.
I talk to people about the levels a lot, though, and I feel like I have like three that I think clearly stand out as my favorites, but I've had other people have totally different.
Yeah, I super want to play. I can't play anything on USPSN right now, which is super annoying.
Wait, why? So you still haven't gotten to solve this?
No, because
this.
The only way to solve it, this is super aside, but like I was logging into I have two PSN accounts, USA, Japan. I logged into my USA one to download something. I think it was Parappa or something. And and like all of a sudden it's like, hey, you need to reset your password. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I didn't realize, which I hadn't realized for years, the email address in that account, I haven't had it in like years. Like it was an email address that like I closed or something. And so I couldn't get the email that it was sending me.
geocities.com
Right.
It's on Steam.
.org.
Wait, what?
It's on Steam.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, well, that's good. But there's other games. Actually, everything is on that list, too. There's like this list of games that in the last like month that I wanted to buy that I
also
can't
on Steam.
Buy. Okay, point taken.
He has a Mac.
I can't. Also the only way to get it is to talk to Sony's customer support.
ABC.
And like, yeah, good luck talking to Sony. I went to their website. They have a chat thing.
Yeah.
It's literally broken. The page does not work. And like, there's nowhere to go. Like, what are you going to do if you want to get support? Because their page is broken. It's the support page. So I can't tell anyone that it's broken. It's like, anyway.
The perfect crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
great. That's Chris Bell worked on that game, right?
Yeah, he's a designer on the game. And then it's the Unfinished Wand team.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
And Annapurna published that?
I think it's the first one that has actually come out from Annapurna.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
They got a lot of good stuff to come.
But let's see. What else? Fire Emblem Echoes. Why don't we talk about Fire Emblem? You guys did that game.
We did. So,
I did it twice.
Twice.
We localized it, so... everything we say is 100% true.
As we always say on this podcast, like we are actively lying to you
to
further our own interests. Like you should assume that about everything we say, because then you can't be disappointed.
That's true. Although I guess I will say that this has happened many times over the years, and I can't say enough that I'm like super, super grateful for it. But we get to work on some pretty kick-ass games, and like Fire Emblem is one of my forever. It's been one of my favorite series. So anytime we get to work on a Fire Emblem game, it's amazing. But like, even putting aside the fact that we worked on it, we'll go a little bit behind the scenes on that next episode. We may have something cool coming up.
Yeah, we're working on something that potentially would be pretty cool. But
people
are
constantly asking us to talk about like behind the scenes type things.
Yeah,
with this
stuff. It'd be very focused on Fire Emblem and very focused on localization. Keep an eye out for that
next episode. But yeah. But even beside that, like I generally play every one and I play them a lot. Like I'll sometimes play through them like multiple times, and this is the same thing. So like we worked on this game in a relatively short schedule, and then I just got a copy this week, and now I'm playing through it again, and I love it. Like even though I know everything about it, I still love it. It's just so much fun to play Fire Emblem.
Right, you're playing through it in English.
Graham went and bought the Japanese version.
I did
all the way through it and finished it.
And I finished it over Golden Week. Yeah, so I finished it twice now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm playing it in English now. And so
what are the big like top line things for people to know about this game? Let's say that I played Awakening. I thought the main scenario in Awakening was written by like fucking Shakespeare, like came back to life and just did an amazing job on the main scenario. I thought it was so well written. Now, sell me on.
Well, if you're talking
what do I need to know about Echoes?
For story stuff in particular, like I feel like one thing that didn't really work too well with me for Awakening and for Fates was
your opinion is now invalid.
Well, just for both of them. For people, like, I mean, Fire Emblem has kind of been a niche series for a long time, but then Awakening was really popular, brought a whole lot of new people into the fold.
That's
and
right.
then after that, all they're familiar with is Awakening and Fates.
Right.
So, I mean, at that point, like, Echoes is a much more, I mean, it's a remake of 2. It's a remake of the Gaiden on the Famicom. And it's a much more grounded story. It's a much more local conflict. Because, like, in Awakening, the stakes are really high.
There's zombies.
Because, like, you're fighting for, like, all of space and time or whatever. And then in Fates, it gets even higher, where you're fighting, like, a space dragon for control of all the known universe.
Spoilers!
But, like, in Echoes,
it's the last boss.
It dials it back. And, I mean, you've got, like, you know, a story about two people, and they're on a continent, and they're fighting for that continent. So it's kind of like, if you jumped into it with Awakening, and you used to, like, super... anime story.
Yeah.
about friendship and fighting for all the world.
And that's not a dig on anime stories. It's just a different kind of story.
It's kind of like, it's a different kind of thing. And for Echoes, you're going to find a much more grounded,
sort of politically motivated. And not to make it sound too serious or anything, but it's certainly more along those lines. It's a story about, yeah, like two warring sides who are basically fighting over a continent. And it's about that war, basically. And it's interesting. And I would say the short capsule version, because I don't want to actually talk about it too much, because we'll talk about it next time, is that it's the first Fire Emblem in a long time. Even back in the day, it was like this. It's sort of the Zelda 2 of the series. It's like, takes the established conventions and just sort of throws them apart, and then like keeps like part. So it looks similar, but it acts very differently. Like, for example, there's no weapon triangle, which is like, what's Fire Emblem without the weapon triangle, right? So there's no, like,
the rock paper scissors
thing is not
weapon
in this.
Priority
it's
kind
more
of
like
thing.
Based about
that's
terrain.
That's weird.
There's no equipment.
That's
there's
weird.
No...
It didn't. The weapon triangle didn't exist yet.
At the time, doesn't matter, because when they remade Shadow Dragon, the first game,
they put it back in. So there's no equipment, but you do have weapons, and you do have like shields and stuff.
You have one item that you carry, which is like, so like, it's not like that. That's another thing that's different. Your weapons don't break, and you don't have like a bunch of different gear and stuff. You literally, like, if you're a class that carries a lance, you have a lance, like, that's default, but then like you can carry an item to have like a slightly better lance or something, but that's it. Okay. Or you can like carry a piece of food if you want to get like, you know, it's like you can carry one thing. It's different.
Okay. In terms of mechanics, also, I mean, spells cost HP to cast, and they have. So I mean, it's
different.
Because like they're extremely powerful, but they have to make that risk reward system. So if you're casting fire on something, it's a low level spell. It only costs 1 HP to cast. But if you're casting something strong like Ragnarok, it's going to take a huge chunk of your health and do a huge chunk of damage.
So are there no like specified spell casting classes, or do they just have a shitload of hit points?
There are. But I mean, even if you're playing as like a mage or something, they don't have all that much health to begin with. So I mean, you have to be careful about how you use them.
Okay.
And
so,
I mean,
well,
they're
you're running around in real time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Right?
Let me jump back to just the big picture stuff, because so the big picture stuff in this game, there's towns now where you can like actually walk around. Well, in the original, you literally walked around like an RPG. In this one, it's more like an adventure game. You go from point to point on a map, talk to NPCs, completely fully voiced. Like 95% of the game is 100% voiced. You like that? Let's see if you're paying attention. So like basically everywhere you go, even the like NPCs are just talking about random crap, it's voiced. So it's very story heavy. And then there's dungeons, yeah. And the dungeons are like 3D over the shoulder, kind of like you're running around and slashing at stuff and like
breaking pots. Yeah. Classic Nintendo stuff.
Yeah, and if you bump into an enemy on that map, then it shifts to the overhead view and you have a classic Fire Emblem battle.
Okay.
So it's different. It's different and it's interesting.
No waifus.
No, yeah, there's no marriage, there's no teaming up with you know, when you get in the last two games, if you went next to somebody, you both none of that.
Also, the pair-up mechanic is gone, where you can actually stack two units into one and make, like, a super unit. That's gone, too, thank God.
Okay. Yeah.
I was never a fan of that.
Kind of rushing through it, but I just wanted to sort of, like, that's sort of the overview, but the good news is it's actually really good, and it's really challenging.
Great music.
Amazing music, yeah. It's a really good,
which I still don't believe is not the Nier guy, because it sounds a lot like the Nier guy.
Not at all, but it's very good.
They have feet in this one. The feet are back.
I think the characters have feet.
I mean, feet are back as of Fates. So yeah, feet.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, we'll talk about it again, Graham. You're talking to somebody who Awakening changed his life, and then they're coming at this from there. So like,
literally, we'll talk about it in a more relaxed environment, and like Mark said, maybe with some interesting background stuff next episode. So look forward to that. But it's out on May 19th for 3DS. One of the last big 3DS releases. I don't know. We don't know what else is coming out.
Ever Oasis
comes and plows it all over. Right.
There's a couple like final things that Nintendo has announced. Like there's Ever Oasis and there's Pikmin, I guess, and
Dragon Quest in Japan.
Dragon Quest in Japan.
What is that face you made when you said Pikmin?
It's Graham. I was making the
disgust on your face.
I was making the that's not Pikmin face.
Oh, boy. Yeah. No. Wow.
I agree. It's Pikmin for babies. It's like the mobile Pikmin. I don't know.
Why don't we take a break, because we've been talking a long time. So why don't we take a break? When we come back, we'll do the news and talk about that 2DS, among other things. So stick around. We'll be right back. All right, we're back with the news, JJ.
What the hell?
All right, very zen this week. Yes. E3 was not going to be very zen. Is the E3 this year?
I have not. I'm like completely not even excited or anticipating anything for E3. I feel like
what
this is going to be like the duddiest E3 of all time.
What are you talking about, Willis?
What the fuck is wrong with you?
This is partially because I actually don't know anything about. Like usually, I hear all this stuff coming up in the E3.
We need the thing that we do when we want to, during the gong. I really don't know.
Because like, well, wait, the leaks that have been happening so far is like another Assassin's Creed, another.
You can't go by the leaks. It's good if things don't leak, right?
That's all the stuff you don't know about. That's most exciting.
There's no new consoles except for the Scorpio, which won't come out in Japan, or if it does,
you play for the games, not the consoles.
It'll be like a mail order.
You're like, except for one, there's only one new console.
Xbox doesn't come out in Japan, so it's like, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even exist.
Gloomy Gus, Debbie Downer, quiet over there. There's real reasons to be down on E3, JJ, which you're not even mentioning.
The plebs.
Because you're not going to be there.
Come on.
The peasants.
All
right. Right, John?
Cruel. You put it that way.
Why are you talking to me?
Because that's what you... Remember when we brought up the fact that people were... Like, regular people were going to E3? You were like, I don't like it. And you were like doing your Trump
impression. The unwashed!
Yeah.
They're coming. And they're going to be waiting in line. They don't mind waiting in line.
I might not be in this industry if I couldn't go to one of those shows back when I was like 20 or whatever.
That's right,
CES.
But you did the decent thing.
Well, I got
faked
in.
Faked your way in.
Yes, that's true.
Like
I worked at EB. Come on, man.
Exactly.
EB people need to be there for some
titles.
How was I going to tell those nerds who love their fucking Jaguar what was coming out?
It's not that hard. So what we're talking about is you can buy a ticket to E3. There were a bunch that already went. 1,000 of them went early bird for $149. Now they're going for $250. And they're holding an event at the theater in LA Live, the Novo. And our friend of the show, Jeff Keighley, is going to be hosting those. I'm not sure if he'll be hosting his normal streaming cavalcade as well, or if this replaces that or what. But I guess they're going to this is the theater where all the Nintendo World Championship stuff was, right? The one right next door. Mm. Presumably it'll be kind of the same thing he'll be doing there that he used to do on the stream, which is having developers come back and talk more about their games and things they announced than they can on the individual stage. But if you buy your ticket, you have a priority seating to that. But I think anybody who goes to E3 can get into that. Otherwise, it's this experiment. What do you think, Greg? Do you have to be politically correct and just say, that's great, I want all people to come to E3 and have a great time?
I think it'll be
fun.
No, I think it's good. I never wait in line to play games at E3 anyway. I'm like walking around looking to see what's there.
You have a fucking king.
No,
it's a diamond on the top. And you just walk up and it's like, just tell them, Big Daddy's here. I want the private demo. And they're like, they part like the sea.
I bring Tim along. And he's
that's
the
right.
One, yeah. I just don't play a lot of stuff at E3. I just want to run around and see what's there more than anything. So it'll be exciting to have people who are excited to be there.
And I will say, that is always a great thing. Like, people used to poo-poo the Nintendo press conferences. Obviously, had people who were a lot of fans. It's like, fuck you. That's great. Like, there's an energy, right? It's cool. I will say, however, I did also enjoy kind of being able to... I mean, sometimes it literally used to be difficult to navigate just to get from point A to point B because the floor would just get stopped.
Well, it's not every day, right? Like you're gonna have your press days to see your stuff. And
I don't think there is. And
really?
That is weird. There should be that's one thing TGS does get right is the first two days are business days.
Well, just because you buy a ticket, though, you can't have meetings with the different publishers.
No, you do, Roy. You get to have any meeting that you want.
You want to sit with Reggie.
If you get to buy a ticket, you can just fucking barge into a meeting and be like, you fucking changed the shotgun fucking power in the last update. You're going to be limited to, but they've already been taking away just regular show floor demos, which I think is kind of, I understand why it happens, but it's always also kind of sad. It's kind of a shitty trend where it's like, oh, that game is already out and you can play it on the show floor, but any game worth anything is only playable behind closed doors. So this might even accelerate that. Or on the other hand, you have like the Nintendo booth where there's literally like a 4-5 hour line to get in. I don't know if they're going to do like the Zelda Fortress that they did last year, or if they're going to do something different. But
I wonder what they're going to have this year.
Well, they I wonder. They're going to have
maybe these, Mario.
Oh yeah,
they'll have
stuff. Okay. Big time. What okay. else they're going to have is maybe this 2DS, this 2DS XL. Announced like minutes after the podcast gets finished editing.
So I joked about this morning, but probably as we're recording this, the new Pokemon got announced or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. We have maybe a rumor about that. Yeah. But so 3D is dead. Not good. Even long live 3D because why is that good? I don't think that's
good. I can't
good.
See it anyway.
Well,
so okay. I don't care.
Your birth defect special. Notwithstanding.
Yeah.
Those of us who can see 3D, I mean, it was a nice option on 3DS games. It was not like people
you
were using
it. You don't use
it.
Well, you don't. I mean, lately though, who uses it? Like that's
the
thing.
New
Nobody
one's
uses
better
it.
Though. They fixed it, right?
I mean, it is a lot better on the new one. Yeah.
Like
new.
Last game that I played much on my 3DS at all was Zelda, and I did use it for that. I liked it for that.
So Link Between Worlds was
it
the
felt
3D
like
was great
a little diorama.
That.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Yeah. And it, as an optional thing, I wouldn't play with it all the time.
Well,
I
it's not like that's going away. You still have the you can have a
but
new 3DS.
I mean,
this is if you want a nicer looking, thinner, like smaller, lighter, cheaper.
But this is Nintendo
option.
More or less going all in on
this.
The
is the
2DS.
Final nail in the coffin of something that was already. I mean, you're right. There will be some games that still have it optionally, but it's like now it's like okay,
Pokemon doesn't have 3D, right? I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, right? Mm-hmm. Boy, you would know. You played it.
I think it might, actually, but it doesn't really.
Definitive.
I thought it didn't. Yeah. Well, you know,
whatever.
Come to us for non-information
but here's
or
the
wrong
point.
Information.
Like, it's already, like, now, okay, 3D is no longer a thing.
Yeah.
Now, 3DS. Anyway, 2DS
it looks
XL
really good.
Looks exactly like it, pretty much like a 3DS XL. Yeah. You don't like
one
the Dragon
no, well,
Quest slime one.
Right. It's thinner. It's lighter. It's not fingerprinty and crap like the original 3DS XLs. And
the finish on it.
Well, it's for kids, so...
And well, it's for me too. But it's also the America only got the ugly one. I don't know. Like you see that? Like once again, the coolest color is Japan only. We get the creamsicle one.
Oh really?
They get like
black
the
turquoise?
Black and blue
not
or
cool?
whatever. No,
black and turquoise.
$150 starting July 28th.
That seems overpriced to me. But I guess the cost of the screens is.
Does it play new 3DS games?
Yes.
Yeah, it plays. Huh. It's a new. It's it has the capabilities of the new 3DS,
right.
but without the 3D.
And yeah, Japan gets a white orange one. I
wouldn't
guess,
it be a lot cheaper to make because if it's a 2DS, they wouldn't be having like the two top screens. Because isn't that how they make the 3D effect? Is they have two screens?
No,
basically?
No. It's two cameras, and yes,
okay.
It doesn't have the two. It has one camera,
so,
that does make it cheaper.
They'd be cutting down on costs on that at least. So
also cutting down on cost. Rime no longer cost $10 extra on the Switch eShop. Rime, the colorful adventure from Tequila Works. This was something because people were noticing like that there were Switch games, even the digital version, but definitely the physical versions that were $10 more. There still are actually than like comparable PS4 game. Puyo Puyo Tetris and Minecraft Story Mode is this way.
You got to pay for it to not run as good, man.
That stuff costs money.
Well, it's because they cost more because of the physical versions, right?
Well,
because they have to buy the carts.
No.
Like that, right?
Well,
come on.
Nobody's coming out and saying that. So,
right.
And Nintendo's not really commenting on it either. They are saying that it's a third. Party publishers determine it. These guys basically got a lot of flack for it and just said that they figured out a way to do it without getting too much into specifics. That's on the digital version, and they were saying they were paying for the porting costs and stuff, which that shit all does really cost money.
It does.
Anyway, that was just kind of a weird anomaly that maybe on with the Switch versions of some games that maybe now will be
so now the physical version comes with the soundtrack. Which will make up the $10 difference.
That's right. So now the other thing of this is that they were planning on selling it separately for $10, the soundtrack, to people only who buy the physical version of the Switch, because that one still is $39.99.
Yeah, makes sense.
The digital version is the one that dropped price. Graham, you ready?
Hey, what's up?
This one's for you.
Ed.
Oh, boy, Ed.
Tell me what to think about this.
We talked about Ed last
week. We talked about it, because there was a leak.
I got a hot take.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what the fuck we're talking about.
So we're talking about Street Fighter V's next character is Ed.
Thank you.
It's Ed.
Yes.
E.D.
Yes.
It's his name.
All right.
Terrible character design.
Absolutely.
Looks really fun to play.
So the thing about Ed is, like, they try to mix things up with each new character that they add. And
he's
Ed's thing is that...
He's a boxer with psycho power.
He's a boxer with psycho power, and he has really simple inputs. So, like, instead of having,
so
like,
the
classic...
he's the true M. Bison.
He's
in
like
both
Dan.
Senses of M. Bison... both territories M. Bison combined to now, like,
what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, because he's an American M. Bison.
Boxer and M. Bison dictator.
Oh, okay, that's what you mean.
Yeah. To you,
huh?
I never expected you to know what you're talking
diamond,
about.
Diamond, platinum, whatever you are.
But yeah, so this, the inputs thing is confusing.
Okay.
Because, like, basically, you don't have, like a Shoryuken motion. You don't have, like, a Hadouken motion. You're not doing quarter circles, half circles. You just do different button inputs. So instead of, like, doing...
It's like Tekken.
Instead of doing, like, a fireball input, you just, like, hold forward and punch.
Huh.
And it'll do a projectile.
Right. So it's Capcom more or less experimenting with more simple control schemes. Because they can't do it with the old characters because people freak out. But if they add a new character, they're like, okay, well, what if we made it simple for people who are new to fighters?
As a filthy casual, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's all going to depend on how it, you know, when you're actually playing them. Like, do these things feel natural to perform at all? Because those can also go very wrong. Like,
yes.
I mean, Ranma 1/2 Hard Battle on Super Nintendo is just like, it's the same. It's got that similar kind of, like, simpler input kind of thing. And, like, nothing makes sense. You don't know how to do anything in the end. Yeah. But
it's too bad about his character design because he looks fucking stupid.
What is he? Describe what he looks like?
Well, no, he's a male buff Cammy. That's what he looks like.
With really bad hair.
He's got the emo swoop.
All Super Fighter 5 characters have bad hair. All right, moving on.
Yeah.
Pokemon Stars rumors. JJ, you mentioned this. This might be like some kind of Half-Life 3 level reading into shit type stuff, but
yeah, I don't think this is.
They announced a line of merchandise in the Pokemon store that says Look Upon Stars, and apparently there's rumor for something called Pokemon Stars. That would be a director's cut version of the 3DS games coming to Switch sometime in 2017, according to a Eurogamer rumor. I don't know. Connect the dots, people. The truth
2017,
is out there.
Huh?
Yeah.
That'd be weird if true.
Which a listener pointed out that we predicted, I called Pokemon Stars like a year ago.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Pokemon Go is doing stuff now with towns. Like, I guess they're starting with this Charlotte, North Carolina.
What?
May 7th. Wait, so this already happened.
They're going to be doing them throughout the summer, though.
So, yeah. So, basically, they're, like, making these bespoke little, like, tours that have you go around your city. Basically, they saw people doing what they were doing last summer in cities, and they're like, hey, that was cool. Let's recreate that. And so, you, like, go around your cities in search of Pokestops.
Right.
And then...
It's like the Pokemon Stamp Rally that they do here.
Yeah, actually.
Interesting.
Gym locations, blah, blah, blah.
Still playing.
And so, the goal this year is to do public events this summer. And yeah, they think summer's a good time to do it. They're probably right. Mario Kart, we talked about it. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe set a record for fastest selling game in the franchise.
What does that mean?
About 460,000. That means that it sold more than 434,000 that the Mario Kart Wii version sold in 2008. And it did it without a crappy peripheral. Greg, when you played Wii, did you play with the steering wheel? Right?
No.
Okay. Do you disdain people who did? Do you look down on them?
I mean, it looks cool. It looks cool.
Yeah, really?
I think it looks cool.
You're saying that with a smile on your face that I'm not sure how to interpret. Japan's mobile hit Monster Strike, John. Your game. Your $1,000 albatross shutting down its English version. Also an 8.4 joint.
That's right. We did localize it.
They're shutting down the English version. I didn't catch on in the States.
Oh, I wonder why. Yeah.
Why?
That's maybe... let's just say it was horribly mismanaged from, like, day zero, which is a shame, because it's a really good game. It's better than a lot of the crap that's still going, so...
It is still going until August 1st, so I guess...
That's even, like... Strike your monsters while you can. If you're going to cancel, like, who's going to play it? Like, there's no...
Yeah, but you want to give a little bit of a...
I guess.
Runaway, yeah, right? They said that they're going to be giving away a lot of orbs and stuff for the players who are still playing. And
yeah.
In other news that's popular for some reason, in other, like, okay, it's... Somebody cares about this news.
Well, where's this going?
Dynasty Wars Warriors
is
finally going open world, JJ.
Now you can pursue Lu Bu all around the world.
You see that mountain in the distance? You can pursue Lu Bu all the way to that mountain.
It's now for PS4. There's no date.
Yeah.
But it's just exciting.
The only detail is that it's open world. But, like, I mean, it's going to be you as a Chinese person killing a bunch of Chinese people and...
lots and lots of Chinese people, and there's artwork here that I swear to God could be from any of like 300 different games. There's a dude with the armor and the fucking pole spear thing.
Zhao Yun, it's probably like his same model from like Dynasty Warriors 3 on the PS2.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that when they announced that, they announced they're adding one new character. Because I think they're all in there already.
There's like 600 of them. So
it's like every person historical. Like, literally. That was born until 2 years ago. Like, literally, there's like, already made a playable character.
There's like the main characters from the books, and then like they put in their like their great, 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 great grandkids and stuff. Like, that's where they're at right now. It's like completely ridiculous. So.
And you're still going to play it, and you're probably going to like it.
Last one I played was, I think, Dynasty Warriors 5 Empires?
Ooh.
And it was okay. I mean, like, they are what they are, and if you're in the mood for like a dumb beat 'em up,
it's kind of hard though. Like to like even if you I'm not going to dog it too hard, but even if you're into the genre, why would you play that one when you could play like all these like licensed versions that are more interesting, like the Dragon Quest one or the
Zelda one? But it's open world, because those usually are not interesting. What?
It's open world.
I don't, John. Like, I never played that and thought, I wish this was open world. That sounds like a
chore.
But
have you ever played that and thought, I wish I was playing this game? I'm so happy I'm playing this game.
Touche.
No, you haven't. You've been like, why am I playing this game? Or
the fact that it's open world.
I like some of the licensed ones. I've never liked the real ones.
I'm curious to see where they take it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
same.
Dynasty Warriors has been stale.
You don't have to like it, Jason. You don't have to be excited. Nobody's like browbeating you into being like.
I like this genre. So
okay. All right. I was gonna say I thought you would be excited at least.
I am a Basara fan. I like the Capcom version of this genre.
Right.
Koei ran out of ideas in the PS2 era.
Right.
So okay. I'm a little curious now that it's open world, but I don't even know what that means.
Well, on that bright note,
it's about time to wrap this.
Yeah, we should wrap this sucker up. So before we get into stuff, guys, special guests. I know it's like the witching hour right now. It's like 4 a.m. where you come from.
I don't know what time it is
for
anymore.
Your people. It is 4 a.m. But thank you guys for joining us. Where do people, like, when they want to find out more? I mean, we talked about everything. We talked about Double Fine. Plug away. Give you a little plug time here for being such good sports. Anything else you want to talk about and mention?
We're everywhere. We're at Double Fine. Twitter everywhere. At Double Fine. That's probably the best. That's the thing we look at the most.
Sure.
Twitter.
Sure.
We use Twitter still, right?
Twitter.
Yeah.
Is there some new thing? I don't know.
We're not on it.
You're not on the Snapchat? The last generation. All the kids? You guys aren't on the hot
Is it the one where you toot?
Should be,
is
probably. I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Mastodon or something like that?
Mm-hmm. We're
what? No. Nope, I don't. That's
right, keep going.
No. I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
It's a crazy thing, and it's got like... it's exploding. we're still known by our names.
Yeah.
Greg Rice. Mm. David O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Put an @ before it.
Mm.
@ our names.
Mm-hmm.
Google us. Find us out there.
Right on.
Everything's a hard thing to Google, though.
It's true, except if you Google the word everything, we're number one. Now, that might not last forever.
That is amazing.
Yes.
That is a fucking achievement.
Yeah.
Were you not worried? Just a quick side
note. I actually wanted to talk about this, too.
I never even thought about that, but because that's something I think about a lot, naming games, where it's like, fuck, what about the like the URLs and searching?
It's like, you know, when people make bands or companies or whatever, what do you pick? And it's like, everything has been done. I run into this all the time. But it's so much stuff has been done. And yet, I think if you just double down and just say, or just do a reset, like,
you have to commit.
Fuck it. Just
take
pick
it
and
to
just
it.
Commit. And when I did Mountain, which was not supposed to ever be popular.
Yeah,
Mountain's number 3 on Google. And again, that might slip and go into nothing. I'm sure it will.
It's been a couple years now.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
No, it might slide all the way. It's probably off.
Maybe it'll come back to number 1.
But we
Maybe
were at a meeting.
People won't even know what real mountains are. They'll be like, mountains? Oh, you mean that the David O'Reilly game?
Yeah.
Like little kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The future,
that.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
that was the idea all along.
Yeah. So, but that was the thing. We were at a meeting at Sony where they're like, you can't call it just everything, you need a subtitle or something, and I was like we had this with Mountain. Mm-hmm. Just trust me, it's going to be, you know,
it could have been like Everything Origins or
right
it's, everything the Forerunner Chronicles you didn't want to do, you know, something like that, or
there's so much there's like it's there's lots of things with it in the title. it's going to be, look, everything's going to be forgotten anyway. Like, not just everything.
True.
Everything is going, it's constantly slipping away. It's okay for this to be kind of hidden, lost in searches and stuff like that. If people discover it, that's wonderful. It's a small, fun, nice game. It's not
cool.
So it's okay.
It's got to be somewhat empowering to hear like people refer to you as like the creator of everything.
Oh, it's the most. Like,
that gameplay trailer you're talking about, that 10-minute gameplay trailer that David did, has been submitted to a bunch of film festivals and won a bunch of film festivals, which is crazy because the game trailer.
It was the biggest video on PlayStation's YouTube for like a month. Which, considering, and it was like
that's awesome.
And nobody saw that coming. Mm-hmm. I think it was
until Dynasty Warriors
really lucky. Announced. And how much of that is accidental clicks? Because like who knows? But people did watch it, and
it was very different. Very lucky. And it was very unique. I mean, that's another thing where people would be like, "No, your trailer can't be 10 minutes long."
Yeah, that was another thing they said. Yeah, they're like, "Don't do it. Make it 40
people
seconds.
Won't watch the whole thing.
Yeah, no one will watch
of
it.
Of course they do. No. So I went to one of the film festivals, the San Francisco one, and of course my badge says Greg Rice, producer, everything, which is like the best conversation starter.
Awesome. Yeah, I love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
awesome.
Great. Yeah. Everything-game.com is the website.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Everything G.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
It's on Steam. Yes, yes. It's
on
Twitter.
I'll put links in the show notes.
Great. Cool. Yeah.
Cool.
Is that how your meetings at Sony go? Like, they give you this advice and you're like, shove it. We're not doing anything you say.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that. I think, like, in fairness to them, I think it's because, like, they're giving you the conventional wisdom.
Yes.
Which,
and you're intentionally trying to break conventional
it's
wisdom.
It's only because, it's like if you half-assed it or didn't, like we were talking about with the name, like, fully commit to it, if you kind of have to it, then it is good advice to take.
Yeah.
But
look,
it's like, because everybody else takes that advice is the kind of the reason why you can actually go against it and stand out, right?
Exactly, and break it. And I think that's like the duty of, that's the beauty and the duty of making indie games
the
is that
the
you, there are certain things that you're able to twist and break and just and buckle and try new things. And, you know, and I really went for it with this and it worked.
Awesome.
Which is so lucky. I'm so lucky. I have a great, you know, and I'm working with a great publisher and managed to really, I mean, you know, like, let's be honest, it's a hard time to make an indie game, to be putting out an indie game.
Yeah, sure.
And this thing found an audience, found an audience. And so it's great.
That's
it's
awesome, great, man. Yeah. Well, congrats. Yeah,
congrats. Thank you.
Yeah, have an awesome, well-deserved first adult vacation and a first time in Japan.
Yeah, man.
Great to you as well. Hopefully we'll have you guys on the show again at some point.
Yeah.
JJ, until then, where can people find us? Us guys.
Well, they can find us on our website, 8-4.jp, our second home, giantbomb.com. We always have a thread on NeoGAF. We have a Twitter at 84play. Mine is SPRSK. Also, Instagram, Justin Eberson. I haven't done that in a while.
At Mark McD. Yeah, I was wondering when you were going to start bringing that back. Well, now I don't even try to talk over you.
You mentioned
when
it
you
at the beginning
it.
Of the show, so I was like, okay, maybe it's okay.
Okay.
So, anyways,
okay. Mark McD.
I'm at John TV.
I'm at Kotawari.
Timely Howard.
And Sarah is not with us this week. She's on vacation.
Actually playing Zelda.
Hiroko says hi. Some people have asked whatever happened to Hiroko. She didn't disappear into a void. She has a little baby. He's awesome. He's our future president. So she's busy. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with the Fire Emblem stuff to talk about.
Maybe in 2 weeks. Let's just say we'll be back next time. With
that's
the
true.
Fire
we're not.
Emblem
yeah,
stuff.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And we're getting kind of close to the big time of year. That special time of year is coming up.
Oh yeah,
a couple episodes away.
Hear it in the distance.
Yeah,
I think.
The scooter.
The scooter's en route to the train station.
The scooter. I think it's better when you use the actual. These guys are super.
They have no idea
what the fuck we've lost our minds. What are we, the scooter or are we at the bus?
No.
At this point, the bus is already gone. And
the
like,
magic
I think,
bus.
No. Scooter is now. The magic bus is next.
All right.
Okay.
Scooter to the bus
and
station. Bus station to the train station.
in a couple episodes from now. So please come back and listen to us. Tell a friend. Until then, who wants to take us out?
I got a shirt today.
We did a lot of good shopping today.
Yeah, we did. We did 109 Men's.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Which is one of the star attractions for getting like Final Fantasy, you know, type clothing or whatever.
It is literally so, Final Fantasy 15 the store, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so we were passing by and saw this shirt, and it was used, this phrase was on like multiple shirts, so I had to get one. beautiful as a music in a fucking face music.
That's not the quote.
Dude, beautiful as a music in a fucking face music.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
You saw him on multiple shirts in different stores that, or just one?
Yeah, there was. Wait, I don't know what the... It might have been even more, but wait, there wasn't... Oh, I have the other one here. Well, workaholics. Yeah, workaholic. Beautiful as a music in a fucking face. Nice. As a fucking face. It ended on face.
Yeah.
Beautiful as a music in a fucking face. And we just got that stuck in our heads like, oh, it's so hard. It's hard.
But not enough. You can't remember it. It's impossible to remember. But every time remember. It's said, it's amazing.
Beautiful as a music in a fucking face.
Confession of gravity as a theory. Funny thing, force alone can be explained with buoyancy and density. The sun is closer than what they've told us. Not 90 million miles away. Stay.